Da-dun. Buddy Boo. You like George Winston, don't you? You want a little more of that? Not a little bit more, huh? Here we are on the 17th of, what month is this? I think this is June. Got a big Lakers game coming up. Clock, we got to watch because we might win the pennant, we might lose. It's all in one game now. And Dr. Fred's Health Science and Energy Show, the 17th of June, 2010. My host, Steve Barish. Steve, are you there?
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, yeah, we're just adjusting the windage on the door so that I don't blow all the papers out of my office. My studio. Yeah, Buddy thought that. That was funny, huh, Buddy? Yeah, that was funny.
Oh, man.
Oh. Yeah, Buddy thought that was pretty funny, didn't you, Buddy? Can you hear? You got your camera on tonight, so we can run some drag strip stuff.
Nope, my I'm still. Nothing's working, Fred.
Well, it's nothing. I mean, there's no.
Well, the unit that's that brings in the computer is out. It's gone. It doesn't work. The people came in, they took it back. They're supposed to have it back to me, and nothing's working. So
they took your computer away from you.
Yeah, no, not the computer. The unit that
the
was supposed to be
box.
Giving me a later unit. So hopefully that it'll be able to help me pick up my my computer and make it work.
Well, that's
so.
Kind of I mean, why didn't they? Who's your
Fred? Don't ask
are
me. I have no idea what they're doing.
They should have brought you a. They should have brought you a. Replacement unit on the spot.
Well, whatever happened, Fred, I don't know what's going on, to be honest with you. It just doesn't work. I haven't had my internet in over 2 weeks.
Wow.
So I don't know what's going on.
I'd have that fixed in 2 hours.
Yeah.
I could bring the roof down on somebody, you know.
It's just terrible. It's
yeah,
just
but who's
terrible.
Who's your provider? Your telephone company?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I should be complaining.
Well, I complained today, So hopefully they'll have it back to me tomorrow. I don't understand, Fred. I just don't understand.
Wow. That's amazing.
It's just a pain in the butt. I think what I might do is just change my provider.
I use Verizon. They're fairly decent. You know, they're not perfect, but, you know, they're fairly decent.
Well, I got to do something because it's been 2 weeks, and it's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Just absolutely driving me crazy.
Yeah, I can relate.
Yeah. So, I've been doing a lot of work with the flamethrower. I think we talked the other day about it.
Yeah, we did.
And that seems to be doing some really wild stuff. So that's really interesting. I changed the design of it. In other words, I changed the pyramids on the right hand side to three pyramids instead of having two pyramids.
Right.
And the energy of it is just phenomenal. I mean, it's just my whole body got very, very hot again, and my clients were very warm in the room. They wanted me to turn on air conditioning. They wanted me to turn on a fan. So whatever is happening with the flamethrower, it's really, really a hot commodity right now. So that's what's happening, and it seems to be a lot of fun for me.
Oh, good.
And we just had a lot of fun with it. I think what did we call you? Tuesday or Monday or whatever?
Tell me, is that you, right? Were you with somebody when you called or what?
No, they had just left.
Oh, okay.
They had just left, and it just got very, very hot in the room. I mean, the degree of the room really got warm. It was very, very hot. So changing that created that kind of heat. And it's a lot of fun to use. Those flamethrowers really, really do work.
Oh, I know.
I'm going to take my white one in and see what happens as I'm working with people, because that'll be really, really interesting to do.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like it.
You know, I've used it in my own meditation room, which is a lot of fun. And I'm getting a lot of people in my room. It's very, very interesting. It's really wild to use. So I don't know why it shows up with the white flamethrower, but there are people actually in my room. I mean, it's fascinating. It's really fascinating to see. They're not hurting. They're not bothering me. They're just, they look like prophets. They look like just holy men. I'm having a lot of fun. So, you know, the room gets very, very high with energy. And it's just beautiful to see.
Yeah, the flamethrowers, you know, for meditation, when we set four of them up like they normally go.
Right.
For meditation, you just can't beat them. You just absolutely can't beat them on meditation level.
Well, my meditation room at home is really fabulous. And I want to see what happens when I start using the white flamethrower instead of the black flamethrower. That should be very, very interesting to use.
Yeah, it should be.
I'm calling New York Times tomorrow. And
oh,
see what I could do. Yeah, and we'll take care of that for tomorrow. Energy. The energies in the room are just incredible. The flamethrowers are, especially now, for some
reason.
Well,
you're really getting off on your energy tonight, you know what?
It's just incredible, Fred. The energies are very, very high. And it's very different. It's very crisp and clean. It's just, it's really different.
Yeah, well, you know, I got those other, I got a sort of like a sale on flamethrowers right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because took those, I got three of them I brought over from Laguna Beach.
Yes, you were telling me.
And I'm offering those up for $2,000 apiece.
Uh-huh.
Buys them, they're normally $4,500 each.
Right. Maybe somebody would be interested in getting one of those flamethrowers. It's just incredible, Fred.
Yeah,
I can't believe the energy that comes from this one flamethrower.
Yeah,
the one in my room, the one in my meditation room or holy room that I use.
Yeah,
the white flamethrower is really magnifying everything tremendously. And the one that's in my massage room, the black with the black, is really, really putting out the energy. I mean, just because I changed it, and it's hot. I mean, it's really, really hot. There's an awful lot of energy that's being poured into the room. And people seem to be coming out, and that is also very crispy and clear. It just changes everything in the room. The air even feels better.
Yeah. Well, you got the black one and the white one.
Yeah.
Where do you get the green one and the red one? That's right. You actually only need two more to do a whole parameter, you know.
That would be interesting. As soon as what I'm really saving for is the necklace. That's what I really want to get right now.
Yeah, the necklace will be awesome.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. But what I have right now with these flamethrowers is incredible. What I'd like to do is put the black one on one of the walls, whichever one it wants to be on, and the white one where the black one is, and see what happens with two of them in the room. That's got to be something else.
Yeah, it should be really cool.
That would be really, really sharp. And that's what I think I'm going to switch things around on Monday and take it in and see what happens. That'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the you know, what happens is, you know, people always are asking the difference between the, they want to know the difference between the flamethrower and the star orb.
Mm-hmm.
That's a common question we get. The bottom line is that star orb is for ELF.
Right.
And it doesn't really do anything for meditation, a little bit, for some people that are real sensitive. But we sure have gotten a lot of ghosts out of houses with them and mills and...
And, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had some really haunted structures. Really haunted structures that bugged people for years that we were able to rid the dark forces out of.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's pretty popular.
Yeah. That's incredible. I never even thought about that. All I'm using it for is just for pure energy.
Yeah.
And seeing what it does. So things are happening in both my rooms. And so I can't wait till I put both of them in my massage room and see what happens. That's got to be incredible.
Yeah. Well, when you get four of them up, it creates a zone because the flamethrower neutralizes this satellite energy that comes down.
Really?
But yeah, the star orb wasn't designed for that. The satellite energy came after the star orb was built.
Mm-hmm.
Neutralizes the satellite. And if you also notice, there's a little neon light on there. Did you see that little light? It's kind of hidden in the crystals and that, but there's a little light. Did you ever notice that?
I have. The only thing I have that actually changes energy is that I can feel it. I mean, I really, really feel it. The thing that really I'm amazed with is how crisp and clear the energy is in the room.
Yeah. Well, what I'm trying to say is that the flamethrower has a circuit in it. It's got capacitors, resistors. It's got diodes
that are hidden
behind crystals. So I don't want to kill the sculpture beauty of it. But what they do is if you get too much radiation, like ionizing radiation, for example, or magnetic radiation, what happens is it lights a little light up. And when that light lights up, you better evacuate, get up the heck out of Dodge.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're in deep trouble.
Okay.
That's the emergency light.
Gotcha.
Remember that thing, we had it up at Dulce, New Mexico, and we first tested it, and we had a spaceship fly right into it within about 20 feet, and as soon as it got near it, it started glowing, and it sent the spaceship on its way because it was one of those.
Wow. Yes, I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah. So the flamethrower has a really good historical story that goes to it, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's got to be very, very interesting because when you were telling me about, you know, the ships coming down and just going away with a flamethrower in the back of the truck, that's got to be incredible.
Yeah. Yes. Three other people besides myself, and they were scared because I mean, the edge of the ship was right right on the hood of the truck. You didn't
That's
get much
amazing.
Than that, you know.
Well, I was reading an article, as a matter of fact, this afternoon. It was discussing about IG Farben.
Yeah.
And also it was talking about the flying saucers coming down from out of the universe at 20,000 miles an hour and came within maybe 20 or 50 or 100 feet from the ground.
Yeah.
And just made a right-hand turn from 20,000 miles an hour.
That's and
we're heading
do, yeah.
towards Mexico.
Right. I wrote about that in my book, Inside Track.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm reading about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I think it's just absolutely amazing. Well, you've been able to see that stuff, and, you know, they told you to keep it quiet. It's just amazing. I just find it. I can't imagine anything doing 20,000 miles an hour and just making a right-hand turn and going towards, or whatever turn it was, and going towards Mexico at 5,000 miles an hour.
Yeah, that was pretty common up there at Point Arena.
Really?
We had to fill out a DDS Form 332 on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen one of those in a while. You can't even, I don't think you can even Google that anymore. They took it. They hit it.
Did they really?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to find.
Yeah.
That's what they do, you know.
You know, it just...
Governments do when they want to hide things, and they hit
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I think it was also discussing mind control at the same time in the 1950s, and I.G. Farben coming out with it first. I mean, it just amazes me. It just, you know, the Nazis were so ahead of everything.
Oh, yeah. And I.G. Farben, if you remember, was, you know, was owned by, let's see, Nelson Rockefeller.
Really?
Yeah, and a good portion of it, and a couple other American investors, and they were the ones that funded Hitler originally. At the end of the war, they put the people up on the dock that were running it, but the Rockefellers were just as guilty of it as the people that ran it, so what they did is they didn't at the dock in Nuremberg. They did not prosecute anybody, which was real interesting.
Mm.
They just had them on the dock, and it was like a mock trial.
Right.
And as a result of this mock trial, they split the company IG Farben up after the war into six different companies.
Wow.
Which it is today.
Yes.
One of them would be the Tamiflu company.
Okay.
Roche is part of it. I'm trying to remember how it all goes, but people would be very highly surprised to know that two or three of our top pharmaceutical companies today are part of IG Farben, and they made chemicals, and they tortured people, and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
During the war, they were making all kinds of mind control drugs and all that sort of thing in order to, control people's minds.
That's incredible.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
They were doing that back in the 50s and the 40s?
40s,
wow.
In the 40s.
Just amazing.
Yeah.
Is that when they started coming out with psychotropic medicines and different things of that nature? Were they discovering that then?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where it all started. That's the SSRI, serotonin reuptake inhibitor drugs, all that came from that era.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. When was penicillin made? Was penicillin made here?
It was made in France originally, but it was discovered a little bit before the war.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Really, really amazing. So how have you been? How's everything out that way?
It's interesting, to say the least. You know, best way I could describe it is interesting. The way people are these days, everybody seems to have a problem understanding what they say and what they're going to do after they say it.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing a lot of that right now. People say, I'm going to do this and that, and they go doing something else.
Yeah.
What they didn't say they were going to do. And it's really interesting to see that phenomenon going on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to a vice president of Bausch & Lomb. He's one of my clients.
Oh, yeah, that's a big company.
Right. And we were talking to nice guy, really, really nice guy. And he said, Steve, you know, it's really interesting, but in my company, you got to be careful when somebody shakes your hand, because he was raised like I was raised. When your father shook somebody's hand, that was it.
Yeah.
And he says they shake somebody's hand, and they don't mean what they say.
Oh, exactly.
And I just find that hideous, actually. I mean, if you can't trust somebody, I mean, to do something, that's sort of crazy, but that's the way I was raised. Dad always taught me that, you know, you shake somebody's hand, you keep your word.
Yeah.
He says it's not that way anymore. He says he runs into that all the time.
Yeah, people lost their self-respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, lots of people have done it, I've noticed lately. People
yeah.
that you think I've known for years have lost it. I mean, just to, you know, they just can't somehow or other deal with what's going on in the world right now. We're going through
yep.
big changes, and they're not ready for them.
Yep.
We got to look at it anyway. It's kind of sad.
Hello? Yeah, we got somebody out there, I think. Hello? Hello?
Sounded like it.
Huh.
Our BBS switchboard.
Yeah.
Buddy Boo's a good, he's got lots of questions.
He's doing good tonight.
Can you hear him?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's really pumped up.
Yeah.
He is. I've never seen him so hot before.
He's really a cool bird.
Yeah, he's really good. I wish I could bring Bella down, but she bites.
Oh, she bites? Is that the one that bites your ear?
Well, no, he does that, but she bites you anywhere, because after she laid some eggs, it changed their hormone structure around. That's what it does.
Oh, really?
So that, this breed does that. Yeah, so once they reach that, I make them petter and everything, but you really can't transport her around much.
Really?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Now, is she bigger than your other bird? Is she bigger than...
Buddy, no, she's smaller.
Oh, she's smaller.
Yeah, she's a Salomon Island eclectus. There's lots of different ones that come from the northeastern coast of Australia, all through the
right.
islands and all those other islands down there.
Right.
All the way over to... Indonesia, all different breeds of, and different size and different coloring
uh-huh.
of this species of bird. Yeah, they're really great. It's really fun to study. I mean, I've done a lot of study on them. But some people breed them. We were thinking we were going to breed them, but it's too much work. Really
is it really?
Them. Yeah.
Well, is she still guarding her eggs?
Well, she's not doing eggs anymore. She's over that now.
Oh, she is?
Yeah, she got sick, and then she had a bacterial infection, and she had to be put in the animal hospital for a week in incubator. She got real sick. Then she came back, and we got rid of the egg factory.
Oh.
Yeah.
So did you get rid of the eggs while she was gone, I presume?
No, she broke them before she left.
She did?
Yeah, somebody did. And so we figured that either she did it or Buddy did it. And then they got an infection, a bacterial infection, off the eggs because they were laying in there for a while.
Right.
And that closed up house. Didn't. They're in a little box, a breeding box.
Right.
Get enough air and sunlight. So we. We didn't encourage that anymore. We had our lesson. You know?
Yeah. Have you been, you've been wearing the Ankh now, haven't you?
No, I haven't been wearing it because I don't have one. I have this projector on.
Okay.
I'm probably going to have to take this projector off pretty soon. It's doing what it's supposed to, but I can see where my battery is running down, and it's time to put the receptor back on.
Okay.
In fact, I can put one on. I got one right here. I got an emerald I can put on right now. You can feel these things. When they start pulling on your psyche, it's time to take them off and be charged
yeah.
with the receptor.
Right.
That's the nice thing about the Ankh. It shouldn't be that intense to redo the whole thing. In other words, it shouldn't require, you should be able to wear them both together. That's the whole idea.
Okay. Now, my question is that you had mentioned last week that it was bringing up all the past lives, is that correct?
Yeah, that's what the aunt does. But it brings them up in such a way that you have an internal awareness that you might not have had before.
Okay.
It would be translated in psychological terms as psychic energy.
Right, right.
See, there is no psychic energy. There is only the quantum entanglement of all experiences.
Right.
Therefore, that would take away a psychic. Psychic is a term that people came up with at some point trying to get a point, I guess, to prove to themselves they had some unnormal, unnatural ability that was kind of cool. You know, I'm psychic, or he's psychic.
Right.
And they had some kind of an inner vision, but nobody has an inner vision as far as I can see. Everybody has it. It's just a matter of using it, and most people diffuse it. For example, let's say you're a really smart piano player as a kid, because you had a
family. Okay.
Okay, as a piano player, you start playing piano at 6 or 7 years old.
Right.
Then you go off to college and you switch, you know, you don't keep up with your music. And then, and let's say you were an incredible piano player, but you just never really pushed towards the goals of being a piano player.
Right, right.
And so as a result, you lose touch with it after a while. You go away from it for 20 years, maybe you go out and get a degree in engineering and become an engineer or a rocket scientist or, you know, or a bridge builder or something else. And so then you turn back when you're 70 or 80 years old to maybe play the piano again, and you plink around on it, but you've so outdistanced yourself from the past lifetime that you are a piano player, plus carrying that experience across into this lifetime, that by natural law, it has diffused itself out of your psyche, out of your consciousness. You see what I mean?
Okay. Yes.
So the only way you can rescue that would be with something like one of these projectors. That would probably start to bring you back. And that's the divine, you know, appointment of it. So you've lost the talent. And you, in the next lifetime, you go into probably, you'd probably be, have a tendency to be an engineer, because that's what you were in this lifetime, and not a musician that you were in the previous one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then there are exceptions to the rule, and that's like Beethoven or Mozart or Elton John.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These guys, they all obviously were tremendous musicians in a very, very near lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And a good example, my favorite example, is the guy that I was playing with who did a reverse on that, was George Winston. I mean, I knew George, known George for, I've got 20 years now.
Wow.
He's pretty famous. I mean, he's a piano player.
Well, his music, I know he used a lot of it in massaging, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's on my album. I was playing it tonight, you know. Except mm-hmm. I was playing the piano, and he was playing the guitar, which he also plays, the slack key Hawaiian
mm-hmm.
guitar.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a new album out now, too. But George was a guy that didn't play the piano at all. He didn't do any mm-hmm. music. He was a cab driver.
Wow.
New York cab driver.
Wow.
Yeah, he was a cab driver. That's all he did.
Amazing.
And in 1982, he just sat down and started playing the piano. By 1984, his songs were all over the world.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, and I don't think he was a cab driver in a past life, because there really weren't any cabs, you
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
other than horse-drawn cabs. He right. might have been that, but I think he was a piano player, and having played with him, you know, in music and in recording sessions, I'd say that he was from the 1800s, he was a honky-tonk piano player.
Wow.
Remember how the guy would be sitting over in the corner of the bar just playing away, and the shooting is going on, you know, in the bar, and he's still playing away? George Winston, when you really get to know him, that's the kind of way he plays.
Wow.
He doesn't play like Patrick Mraz, who's a virtuoso Baroque music.
Mm-hmm.
George
mm-hmm.
Winston's a honky-tonk player of the finest caliber there is. taken that to another level, but it's still there. So here's a guy that did the right thing, but he got it a little late. You know, I'm not knocking cab drivers. They make pretty good money, but he just suddenly started playing the piano. That was his calling, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing how things just happen to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It just, look at me and look at you, you know? I mean, we're drag racers. If you'd have told me back when I was running a world championship at Lions Drag Strip, I'd be wearing a pyramid on my head and making receptors and vitamins. I'd have told you, what's wrong with you? Well, you've been smoking. I'm going to be building race cars the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then one day I got lost interest. It just, I said, where am I going with this? You know, I'm spending a lot of money on it. I'm making some money, but it's not what I want to do anymore.
Right.
It got boring.
Right.
Like that. You know? Although I'd like to have some of those 409s that I own.
Oh, gosh. The Z11, you know, it's amazing that in 62 you had a Z11 engine. I just.
Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely amazing, Fred.
Yeah, Borgoise and Wade owned it before I did. That's actually, Vince Califano had it for a short time, but Borgoise and Wade had it, brand new.
Yep.
They won. They were running up against our buddy, what's his name, with the white 409.
Dave Strickler?
No, the other guy. You know, the one that had the model out.
The white one. I think I know who you're talking about. The old man. He's old man. I think he's about 75.
Yeah, he was older than me.
Yeah.
We were racing, and even then he was older, yeah.
Yeah, I can't say.
That was
Hayden
in my
20s, Prophet.
And he was in his 30, 35, 40.
Hayden Prophet, was that his name?
I raced Hayden and beat him, no. It's,
you did?
Yeah, not Don Nicholson. Don Nicholson?
Don Nicholson, yes.
Yeah, the white one. Yeah, I beat Hayden Prophet's ass good.
Did you really?
Yeah, I got him off the line real good. He never caught me.
Wow.
Running against him that I got the 66 World Championship, running against his 409.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
and
amazing.
And then year before that, we had my Z11 in another car. It was in a 62 Super Sport.
Right.
Who we ran up against. It was some big name, though, that we beat. We were running Super Stock in that class, which was just that below. Funny cars were just coming out.
Right.
But we had a funny car. We were running low 10s in a 62 full-body car, low 10s, just out of the 9s. In 62, that was fast.
That was fast. That's real fast.
Our miles an hour was up around 140, 145, so we were moving.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, and we just stripped the interior out of that car, but it was still a full car. I mean, it wasn't gutted or anything.
Right.
Out and put a roll bar in it. And
I remember going to Cecil County, Maryland, Cecil County Dragway, and I took my Triumph down.
Yeah.
And Dave Strickler was there. He had a brand new 63... Super Duty, but he had the Z11 with the aluminum front end and the bumpers and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And he turned 11, I think it was 11.2, 11.3, 135 miles an hour.
And we were we were faster than him. We didn't have any aluminum on board.
That's amazing.
Yeah. No, we were running low 10. I think our first run was 10.92 and then got down to 10.55 and then 10.39. And I don't remember where we... You had to get a good bite. It was over at Lyons when C.J. Hart was there, the founder of Drag Strip in this country.
Right.
And, C.J., I love C.J. He was the guy that started drag racing in 1947, made it legal.
Wow.
Right out at Lyons Drag Strip in Santa Ana.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
You had a lot of fun, man. You had a lot of fun with drag racing.
I did. You know, I just sold my last race car.
You did?
Earlier this year, I sold it last fall.
You talking about the Corvette?
Yeah, the 1,000 horsepower.
Yeah, that's got to be incredible. That's always been a lot of fun on that car.
Yeah, I sold it to a guy down in Florida, a guy named Vince, and he loves it. He collects cars. He's got a lot of cars. I need to call him.
Uh-huh.
And it was a 9-second car on the street. Well, that's 1,000 horsepower, 600, 540 cubic inch engine, all aluminum, everything, so... He says he could pop some real big wheelies with that thing.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Imagine a Corvette coming off the line with both front wheels 3 feet off the ground. That was a shocker for a lot of people.
That's incredible. What a ride that must have been for you.
Yeah, I took Mikel for a ride out. We have a driveway. It's about an eighth of a mile long here.
Uh-huh.
And it was pretty kind of low. I was afraid I couldn't get it out of the driveway, but I raced it in the driveway.
Uh-huh.
I could get the left front wheel off the ground, but it wasn't enough traction. It scared the hell out of her. She rode in it.
Oh, once. I can imagine.
She rode in it for about 200 feet and got out and said, this ain't for me. Because, you know, that thing is loud. It has five exhausts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, 1,000 horsepower in a car that weighs 2,000 pounds, or 2,300 pounds, it's a half a horsepower per pound.
That's
a hell
incredible.
Of a lot of energy.
My Cobra is 600 horsepower at 2,300 pounds.
Yeah, that'll be pretty quick.
It's certainly not like your Corvette, but
you don't have the torque. I don't think this thing had. But
no way on the planet.
Yeah, this thing had the torque, and it really, when you let the clutch out, I mean, literally, it's like a dragster. For the first second or so, you almost black out. It's pulling like 7 or 8 G's.
Oh, my gosh. The first second.
It's kind of hard to describe.
Yeah.
Have it pointed in the right direction, because if there's a problem, there's nothing you can do about it for at least 2 seconds. And that's a long time in racing, by the way.
Yeah, I know. The thing is that it's a kind of car that you would just, hold on to the steering wheel and just aim it.
Oh, yeah. Well, in my 409s, I could put a $100 bill on the dash and have one of my friends sit in the passenger seat and tell him, once I let the clutch out, until you count to 10 or maybe 15, you get the $100 bills if you can reach it. Nobody ever got the $100 bill.
No, there's no way on the planet.
Yeah, after about
I had a 62 409 back in 62, and that thing was fast. I mean, that thing was really, really fast. And it was in an Opala, and that was a gorgeous car.
And what color was it? One of the kind of the brownish color, the light brown?
Mine was red, just was bright red.
Oh, you had it. Wow, was it a convertible or a hardtop?
No, it was a hardtop. It was a two-door hardtop, Impala.
Oh, yeah. What color was the interior on it? Red?
Red. Everything was red.
Wow.
I took the gear shift out, the Chevrolet gear shift, and I put it in a Hurst.
Yeah, it's Borg Warner. Those things bend.
Yeah.
You could bust your transmission. I took the whole transmission out of mine. We never ran Borg Warners. We ran those Muncie transmissions.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I'll tell you, the Borg Warner
had a 256 low, which was fine. The Muncie had a 220.
Right.
So you had to really run a 456 rear end in them and run the hell out of them on a quarter mile. It was okay. It worked.
No, 456, boy, that's
a rear end,
Yeah.
If you put a 411 in it, it was okay with a 220 low. I mean, a 256 low, 220 would pull the clutch out of it. It wouldn't hold.
Yeah.
And to run a 456 and buzz it to about 7,500 RPM.
I think the pistons were 11.5 to 1, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, the Z11 they were 13 to 1.
Were they really?
Yeah, we run 105 octane in it, which you could buy at the pump in those days.
Yeah, Sunoco you could buy it real.
You can buy it now, but it's like $10 a gallon.
Yeah, really fast stuff.
Well, that's what we did in those days.
Yeah. That sounds really great. But getting back, do you have any idea what the heart does, Fred? Have you worn that at all?
No, the heart unit. I've got some clients that have them, and it's a real serious, what I call a real serious receptor.
Right.
In other words, it does what the regular receptor does, but it does it on three different levels.
Wow.
People used to call me up and they'd say, okay, my thyroid needs some correction, right? Because it's
right.
Radiator energy or whatever, because it's a four-way.
Right.
So I get them an emerald. And then they'd wear it for a year or two, and then they'd have to change the stone out because it didn't work anymore. Usually, most people go from an emerald to either a ruby or a sapphire, depending on whether when they got their thyroid working, there's too much electrical stimulation for the heart, and the heart starts you know, the blood pressure could go up, even
right.
though they've lost weight. So therefore, they need to probably, they've had a bad diet, and they need to correct that, so they have to go to the Sapphire.
Right.
Or their energy could go a lot higher, and their heart's working fine, so then they put them into the Ruby, and it runs up to the Pituitary.
Right.
So you can go in either direction. So with the heart unit, we put the stone in the top of what they need now, and we put the next two stones they're going to need in the future in the bottom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Therefore, they'll get a lot more mileage out of it. And then after they're getting done with that, we can switch a stone out for, you know, probably all diamonds. I've sold some with all diamonds in them already.
Yeah, yeah.
People just don't need those colored stones anymore. They
right.
need the white stones.
Yeah.
So it hits them on three different levels versus
yeah.
one level like the normal receptor does.
Yeah.
So
I remember you putting on the, I believe it was the Ankh, and your face actually changed to a bright white light.
Yeah, it did. I remember that.
That was incredible. I mean, I was looking right at it. I couldn't believe the change in energy.
Yeah.
It was really incredible. What a sight that was.
Oh, yeah.
And that was with the Ankh, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just reading some of the chat pop up. You got to get your computer. Get those guys to get your computer.
I know, Fred. I know. It's such a pain in the butt.
Get up on Ustream. We can do a double television thing.
That would be wonderful.
And then you got all this chat room activity going on.
Yeah.
And people are talking back and forth. And
yep.
It's really kind of cool.
That's
you know?
Wonderful.
You got like you're multitasking on this show.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Well, what I might do is I'm going to call them tomorrow. If I have to, I'll go down and go get it and hook it up. But I got to get something to make this thing work because I'm missing a lot on your program.
Yeah.
Really am.
Yeah, I see more people are tuning in. They got the English crowd over there in England. Those guys
uh-huh.
are up late listening to the show. It would be 2 o'clock in the morning, I think, right? Vroom, vroom. I think it's 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Is it in England? Or 1:45? Guys are late night kind of guys.
Uh-huh.
We got our followers over there, you know, our listeners or whatever.
Yeah,
kinda
yeah.
neat.
I wonder what it would be like to wear a the new Ankh. Is there any difference between a white diamond and the canary diamond, Fred? Or do
yeah, there
react?
Is.
See, there
my,
is.
Yeah, there's a big difference. The canary diamond runs on a what's the angstrom unit the frequency? It's between green is 560, red is 6. The green is, let's see, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, it's running around about 525 angstroms, okay?
Wow.
White is a combination of all of the frequencies, okay?
Okay, right.
Whereas yellow is running around 525 angstroms, somewhere in there. And so yellow is, it's doing the crown chakra because it's a diamond.
Right.
And the hardness factor, the reflective index of a diamond, but it's mostly working in the solar plexus.
Okay.
And so my one I've got for sale is more of a solar plexus, although it has white diamonds on the bridge.
Okay. I wanted to ask that. In other words, it's got white diamonds, and the yellow diamond is the big stone
in the center. But
right.
the thing is, with canary diamonds, it's very hard. There's lots of canary diamonds around that have a light yellow tint to them.
Right.
And they're not worth that much. You know, they're probably not worth as much as a white diamond, even. A real nice
okay.
one. But when you get into the darker yellow canary diamonds, they can go 60,000 for the carat, you know, I mean.
Really?
Yeah, and they get pretty expensive. The only thing that really outdoes them is the pink diamond. You get
a
$1 million
diamond,
going on. Pink diamond at a and a carrot can go for $1 million.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So this one I've got is a very dark yellow.
Okay.
And it's worth, the diamond alone is worth 15 or 20,000.
Wow.
But I don't really want it anymore. I want somebody else to get the value out of it because
okay.
I had it for 10 years and it served my purpose. I bought it 10 years ago when it probably I probably paid like $7,500 for it 10 years
uh-huh.
ago, maybe somewhere in there, and that's a good price.
Right.
Then.
Right.
And that's excluding the cost of the receptor, which is a 4 millimeter 30-inch chain.
Right.
Right now on the retail market, that's going to go for around $4,500 or so. So, I mean, somebody at 12 grand, somebody's going to walk off with something that's an investment.
Yeah, because I think it's a pave, isn't it?
It's a pave. And platinum.
Yeah.
Gold and platinum, and it's the most expensive one we ever made like that. But
right.
I've worn it for 10 years, so it's a used piece. But it's been on out by spaceships, and it's got a bit of a karma background to it, you know?
Yes, yes.
So it'll go to the right person.
Absolutely.
The last one that I had was 10 years before that. My attorney in Long Beach has it. And the one 10 years previous to that that I wore it and sold, a guy named Harold Westbecker in Germany has it.
Huh.
And they're all happy with them. And obviously, I sold them. I think I sold the one to Ron, the Long Beach one, for 10 grand. I think I sold the one to Harold for 10 grand.
Uh-huh.
Which back 20 years ago, when gold was $500 an ounce, was a very good price.
Uh-huh.
Now gold is $1,200 an ounce, and I'm only asking $12,000 for this piece I've got. It's basically a steal.
Right, right, right.
Got to get somebody that understands that, and I'm not going to bend over backwards to give it away. You know, it's basically.
No, I'm working up an ad now so I can call them, and I needed to know if you had white diamonds or a canary.
Yeah,
so
white diamonds on the bridge and a yellow.
Yes,
canary.
And a canary in the center. It's a dark canary.
Yeah,
that,
you have to present it as an investment.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would probably appraise out way higher than I'm asking for it by an appraiser.
Yeah.
Because,
right.
Number one, I got a patent on it. Number two, I have a name out there. Paradigm stamped on the bottom in a lot of high-end shops is a definite brand, accepted brand, and it will take an appraisal. And to prove that, we've had a couple of them lost in shipping, and we would get full retail price for them because they couldn't be replaced.
Right.
You know, the insurance companies had to insure them for the full price.
Right, right.
Not the wholesale price.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a good investment. You know, it's not going to go.
I know I enjoy mine, so it's, I still feel the light coming to my back. So it's really, it's still really doing something, but I really want to get the newer model.
Yeah, well, I'm the same way.
I have that.
The newer model won't be as expensive as the one that I'm getting rid of, but I don't care. It has a different function.
Right, 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 right.
That's basically how that goes.
Yeah. But it's fun. I mean, I still enjoy mine. I really, really love it, and it's still very powerful. So I really enjoy it. The one I have a lot of fun with and I'm experimenting with is the platinum, my platinum piece. And that's really, really powerful. I mean, that thing is, that'll knock your socks off.
The platinum, oh, yeah, the projector.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll do that.
Yeah, that'll knock your socks off. That's really powerful. I'm still getting used to it.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of time to get used to
that
stuff. People just don't appreciate what we have, but they will eventually, you know.
Eventually
some people
they
really
will.
Do. They're great clients.
Yep.
We get people that'll buy a $150, $200 one, then they'll turn around, they'll buy a silver one.
Right.
And pretty soon they buy a gold one.
Right.
You know, and they'll work up to those things. That's very common for people.
Well, you know, I had my a blue sapphire. I wore that for almost 8 years.
Yeah, I remember.
And then I traded in for a gold one with diamonds. And then I got the gold one with the pave diamonds. It's a step up. I mean, everything is a step up, and it just makes a big difference.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know, it's just, and they're powerful, Fred. I mean, it's very, very powerful, and they become very intimate because they become part of you.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and that's the beautiful part about it. And But the projector, I mean, you ask for something, it's immediate.
Oh, I know.
You know, it's really immediate.
That was real well.
Yeah.
But what happens is, with me, like most people, you can do that for 2 or 3 months, and you got to take it off for a little while and give it a rest.
Yes.
And recharge with your scepter, because it does drain some of your energy, your spiritual energy out.
Yeah.
Second
either
stuff.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
That's all right. The projector is made for pure energy, and the receptor is also pure energy, but it works in a different way. That's all.
Yeah, and people don't understand. I mean, I see quantum this, quantum that out there as buzzwords, but they really don't understand what the word quantum means.
Right, right.
And it means small, but it also, when you talk about entanglement, you're talking about a permanent thing that has has no beginning. I mean, it's just forever. There's no time involved.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's got to be incredible. I know I love my piece so much. I love both of them. They really do different things. And sometimes I wear them both together. Sometimes I take it off and I wear my projector for a while. Then I wear my nuclear receptor for a while. It's wonderful to have.
Yeah.
They really do a great job. And I'll tell you, the nuclear receptor is really, it protects me. It really protects me, and so does the projector.
The reason it protects is because you have auric offset.
Mm-hmm.
Auric offset means if you get hit with poison from the air, or any of that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
Or even in your food, instead of getting a free radical and getting sick, it allows you to process that, and that free radical no longer becomes a free radical. It's used up.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, I'll tell you, you were very lucky to receive that, Fred. You really, they really picked the right guy for it.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Well, anyway, we're going to be running out of time here in about 3 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. These shows go pretty fast these days, you know?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
So go ahead and put your...
Sure. My phone number is 585-746-8321. If you need some information on stones or projector or nuclear receptor, please give me a call. I'm more than happy to help you out. It's free, and I'll do the best I can to give you all the information that I can.
Yeah, you help people out with understanding where to place their standalone systems. That's really important when they get into the large standalone precision system. A lot of people get kind of lost. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't quite understand what to do with them.
Well, I've been able to help people. A lot of people call me, and we move the standalones around in their homes until we find the right placing for them. And we've had a lot of luck with them. We've had a lot of people call, including a good movie star friend of yours. And so we've had a lot of fun talking to them and moving them around and getting the potency absolutely right.
Yeah, that's really important, I think, anyway.
You bet.
Get all that done. And then you can reach us at 1-800-729-2603. That's 1-800-729-2603. And just type in my name, Dr. Fred Bell, which in the search engine, which takes you to the Pyradyne website, which is Pyradyne. And that's a good website to go to. They have a lot going on there.
Absolutely.
Getting ready to bring George Winston back on here.
Ah.
And we had a lot of fun. And Buddy's going to go crazy now. We recorded this at Uncle Billy's hotel or something on the Big Island the Big Hawaii Island. And it was a great, fabulous time. We recorded this in a room, small little room. With a good Sony recorder system. And I think we made one pass on the song. They rehearsed for a few minutes and just made the song. That's why I say he's an amazing musician, you know?
Yeah.
All right, well, we're out of here. It's 5 minutes till, and Don likes everybody off so he can get the next person on, and keep in touch. And I'll talk to you hopefully next week, Steve. Let me know what happens with the New York Times.
I'll let you know.
All righty.
Take care.
Bye.